Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, March 1st, 2018. President Kiir's spokesman dismisses the UN Human Rights Report on South Sudan.
The inconsistency of the report, even that an 85-year-old woman was raped in front of her husband, is completely illiterate, because I don't think there is an 85-year-old woman that has a husband, still has a husband who is alive.
And nine opposition leaders have formed an alliance to fight the government in South Sudan. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Leaders of nine opposition groups say they have formed an alliance to accelerate efforts to bring peace in South Sudan. The leaders of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance say they are serious about what they are calling rescuing South Sudan from total disintegration. Kwajel Asu is the Secretary General of the South Sudan Movement for Change and spokesman for the new alliance. We now go live to Lasso, who is in southern U.S. state of North Carolina, for details on this new group. Kwaje, thanks for your time.
It's my pleasure to have me, Mr. Tanza.
Tell us more about the members of this new group. Who are in this new group?
First of all, before I delve into this group, I would like to say that we in opposition believe that the unity of opposition is paramount to address the issues that brought the country to this crisis. And since the Haiti Revitalization Forum 2, we've been working together collectively as a unified position addressing the issues of the country. What had happened with the formation or the birth of South Sudan Opposition Alliance is a milestone in our history as South Sudanese. It's an opportunity for us to cultivate our effort and work together in a concerted mechanism to address the issues. We in this group consist of FDP, NAS, NDP, PDM, SSLMA, and South Sudan National Movement for Change, as well as SSPM, SSUM, and UDRA.
And who are the leaders behind? Could you give me the names of the leaders behind these groups? I mean, South Sudanese will be familiar with the names of the leaders as opposed to acronyms.
Absolutely, absolutely. The leaders who have signed this press release and the charter is Honorable Gabriel Chansong, General Thomas Cyril Swaka, Dr. Lama Cole, Dr. Hakim Dario Moy, General Bapinge Montreal, Governor Bangasi Joseph Bakasoro, Dr. Kaselo Garang-Ring, and General Peter Gadediak.
Why is the SPLM-IO not part of this new outfit?
This is a preliminary process of unifying or forming the alliance. IO is still with us, and we're working together as opposition. However, they still have their consultation going on before they joining the alliance as we speak.
And this new group is not part of the high-level revitalization forum. How are you going to fit in? Because I've not seen any name of an alliance as part of the revitalization forum.
This group were individually members of the Haile Revitalization Forum. However, in our presence in Addis Ababa, we've been working together as one, including the IO.
And do you have one leader who is going to be taking you forward in this alliance?
As we speak, our charter states that the leadership council will be rotational. We are working on agreement on the duration, as well as the military command as well will be rotational.
And what is new in this alliance that can convince South Sudanese that your group is serious about peace? I mean, we have seen a lot of alliances that have been there, and there's nothing. It's just talks.
Well, I have to be honest with you. First and foremost, our unity is the key. By us coming together.
Key to what? Key to what? Tell us, key to what?
Excuse me, say it again, please.
You're saying your unity is a key. Key to what? To open which door?
Key to potential peace in our country, or bringing the rest, security in for our people back home.
And how are you going to bring peace?
Our working together, addressing the core issues that bedeviling our country, that has to be addressed in a unified voice, because we are not interested in any accommodation as the government has been portraying to us as opposition, but we are more concerned about what brought the country to this crisis, and we would like to address it with in a unified voice as an opposition.
And looking at the combination of your alliance, there are people there who are armed and there are others who are not armed. So how are you going to achieve your objectives? Are you going to use peaceful means or force?
Well, to be honest with you, Tanza, I think there's for the lack of term, there's so many ways to skin the cat. Our main objective, however, is to bring peace, to bring change in our country.
Well, Kwajie, thank you very much for speaking with us here at the South Sudan in Focus. That was Kwajie Lasu, Secretary General of the South Sudan Movement for Change and spokesman for the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, a new umbrella of 9 opposition parties. He was speaking to me from North Carolina. President Salva Kiir's spokesman is criticizing the recent report on South Sudan by the UN Human Rights Commission, accusing dozens of top military officials of committing war crimes in South Sudan. Ateny Wek Ateny claims the report contains several contradictions which could destabilize South Sudan. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The UN Human Rights Commission report released last Friday identified more than 40 senior military officials who the UN says may bear individual responsibility for war crimes and crimes against humanity in South Sudan. Human rights investigators collected testimonies and information from victims witness atrocities committed by men in uniform at units deployed in parts of the country. The report says individual commanders were responsible for widespread attacks on civilians. Ateny wants the UN Human Rights Commission to hand over to the South Sudan government the names of the military officials accused of committing crimes and all corresponding evidence. He dismissed the report, saying it could affect efforts to end the conflict in South Sudan.
If it is about destroying peace, yes, it is capable of destroying peace, this report. Because the evidence is just based on literature, that they have interviewed 230 people and examined 58,000 documents written by who? With the inconsistency of the report, even that 85-year-old woman was raped in front of her husband, is completely literature. Because I don't think there is an 85-year-old woman that has a husband, still has a husband who is alive. What is the life expectancy in South Sudan?
The commission's report identified 40 generals, 8 lieutenant generals, 17 major generals, and others who may bear individual responsibility for serious human rights violations. Ateny claims implicating top army officers could hurt efforts to restore peace and stability across South Sudan.
By releasing such a report, which would go spontaneously with the sitting in the peace agreement in Addis Ababa, would significantly jeopardize the process. Because now you are talking about 40 generals, talk about 37 senior army of commanders, and that are the people commanding the army. The whole of them is not leaving. If you look at 8 lieutenant general, it is those 8 lieutenant generals that are on top of the whole army. It is the entire leadership of the SPLA. The 17 major generals are those who are actually commanding the army. So it is like trying to say you want to disband the whole SPLA.
One resident of Juba who identified himself only as Mark for fear of government reprisals says the names must be made public.
I think these type of reports, they're good, but the only problem is the reports come and there is no action taken against the people who are doing bad things. You know, we need South Sudan to change. But if we don't enact policies that can bring change, then there is no use of making such kind of reports, because now you find officials who are doing bad things. And sometimes they are not named, sometimes they are named, and nothing happens to them.
The commission's report is the first ever since it was mandated by the Human Rights Council to collect and preserve evidence for use in the hybrid court, which is yet to be formed, as is stipulated in 2015 peace agreement. Ateny claims the report will hinder establishment of a hybrid court, since many of the soldiers who would be providing security for the hybrid court would be indicted criminals.
How can the entire army, the leadership of the army, be accused of committing crime against humanity? And how can hybrid court work here now, when the entire army that would be would be the one to secure the ivory cord in Juba. He's all criminals. He's made criminals.
The commission's report documents what it describes as appalling instances of cruelty against civilians. It cites cases where some civilians had their eyes squeezed out, throat slit, and some men and boys were castrated. The report documented cases in which children were forced to watch loved ones being raped or killed. Some residents of Juba town doubt any trial of the suspects in Juba's court could produce credible results. Mark says nevertheless the names must be made public and individuals prosecuted, but he doubts any trial in South Sudan's court. A resident who preferred her name not mentioned for safety reasons says she doubts the military officials implicated in the report will face trial in South Sudan.
You know our country and you know how things are being done. Well, like some people, they have, like most especially when there is something connected to the government, talking about it is not that easy. So they might bring it fine, but I don't think so that it will work out actually.
Information Minister Michael Makwe dismissed the UN report last week, saying the government of South Sudan has its laws regarding crimes committed during conflict. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A court in Jonglei State Capital Bor sentenced both the owner and operator of a boat that capsized on the Nile River, killing at least six people, including three children, last October. Deng Gai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
Officials said the passengers who drowned in the Nile last year were traveling from Bor to Minkaman in neighboring Eastern Lakes State to receive food rations at camps for internally displaced persons. The boat's owner, Manon Bol, and boat's operator, Acheng Majuk, were arrested and remanded at Bor Central Prison following the accident. Bor County Court presiding judge, Deng Akui, found Majuk and Bol guilty of overloading the boat.
The court ruled out that the boat owner and the driver, boat driver, they should compensate six people who were drawn into sea because according to the negligence and high speed.
41 passengers were on board when it capsized. Officials say the boat is built to carry less than 30 people. Judge Akoi ordered the two men to compensate the relatives of the deceased for the lives lost.
The court have thought that should be compensated by 10 head of cattle. The other is 7 years. The court has thought that to be compensated by 10 head of cotton. The small child, which is 4 years, the court has thought that should be compensated by 5. Three people, three. Each one is 26 head of cotton.
Nang Mabur is a relative of the three children who drowned in the Nile. Speaking in Dinka, Mabur says he is satisfied with the court's ruling.
My opinion is that each of the little girls should have been compensated with 15 cows, each of the little boy with 10 cows. I believe the captains of the boats did not intend to kill my nephews, and yes, it was an accident. So I accept the court ruling. We will not complain.
The secretary of the boat owners union says boat owners also accepted the court ruling. Speaking in Dinka, Tongobor says the court ruling is in favor of the victims.
It's good that the case has been concluded with this court ruling. We have no opinion about the fairness and unfairness of the ruling, but we are happy that the case is over. We as a boat owners union Bor will be careful to never again allow any overloading.
Bor residents say the journey by boat from Bor to Minkaman takes 4 to 5 hours, and in most cases the boat departs at night, making it difficult to conduct any rescue mission in case of an accident. Boat owners union officials say they do not expect Bol and Majuk to appeal the court's ruling. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, AMISOM meets in Uganda to discuss security in Somalia. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
How do you resolve problems with your relatives?
We have to listen to all directions where the problem is coming from. We listen to different parties and then we come up with a solution to it, maybe through brainstorming.
For instance, one day we have conflict with my elder brother. He was dominating the property of the father. So what I did is that I have not to take him to the court or elsewhere, but best thing is to call the members of the relative, uncle, auntie, and the rest of the brothers, so that we come and discuss the issue, the misconvenience among us.
Dad will usually sit us down, get our opinions on certain issues that are affecting us, and then at the end of the day, that's when they'll make the decisions as parents.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Officials from countries that contributed troops to the African Union force in Somalia are meeting in Uganda this week to discuss a transitional security plan for the troubled country. While AMISOM has made gains in Somalia, the risks presented by militant group Al-Shabaab remain vivid due to inadequate funding and troop numbers. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
Over the past few years, AMISOM has pushed Al-Shabaab away from major cities, and the federal government of Somalia has taken steps towards stability. With foreign help, the Somali security forces have grown stronger, and political leaders are aiming to hold nationwide elections in 2020. These gains, however, are being undermined by inadequate troop numbers and lack of predictable and sustainable funding to fight Al-Shabaab and a small faction of Islamic State fighters in the north. The five AMISOM countries are planning to start a drawdown of their troops in Somalia this year and withdraw all of them by the end of 2020. Ugandan Foreign Affairs Minister Sam Kutesa says it is essential that the Somali government intensify its effort to provide security for its people.
It is crucial that the drawdown of AMISOM is synchronized with the corresponding strengthening of Somali security forces. The failure to carefully manage this process could imperil the political and security gains already made.
The ministers and defense officials meeting in Kampala say Somalis also have to make progress in settling internal political disputes, including tensions among clans and the periodic clashes between the forces of Puntland and Somaliland. These are political issues that AMISOM has no mandate to handle, yet they stand to undermine the little peace and stability already gained. The troop-contributing countries are also seeking support from key financial institutions such as the World Bank and African Development Bank. Smail Chagui, the African Union Commissioner for Peace and Security, notes that resource concerns could sink the fight against Al-Shabaab.
More broadly, AMISOM will need to continue to enhance its operational effectiveness. Our operational imperative of degrading Al-Shabaab requires that we maintain an offensive and not defensive posture and the requisite configuration to allow for that.
The AMISOM talks open Friday in Kampala. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
South Sudan's Minister of General Education has threatened to take disciplinary measures against government school administrators across the country who fail to abide by orders requiring them to implement a free education policy for both primary and secondary schools. Wakes Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Deng Deng Hok, the Minister for General Education, says some government schools are not abiding by the free education policy as stipulated in the South Sudan Education Act 2012.
I have received complaints from parents and from learners that when they go to register in a school, they are asked to pay a school fee or a registration fee. This school fee or registration fee collected by a public school is illegal. It is a violation of the law. And any head teachers or any teachers who are collecting these fees will have to refrain immediately. If they do not refrain immediately, we will take administrative measures. And those head teachers that are found to be guilty of violating the law will lose their job.
Head teachers in government schools say they are not opposed to the government policy of free education. The head teachers say the policy cannot work unless the government allocates money and resources to the schools. George Kenyi is the head teacher at Juba Day Secondary School. Kenyi says reprimanding teachers is not the right approach.
I think since now we are talking of articles of the law and then criminal offense and so forth, then being a head teacher is nothing. Being a head teacher will never be an obligation for anybody. I will just shy away, and anybody who wants to come and also try to manage such a situation, come and then I see how it will be, so that I learn.
The South Sudan Education Act has never been fully implemented since it was enacted in 2012. Kenyi stresses that public schools have failed to implement the policy because government has failed to provide schools with the resources. Kenyi says schools do not charge school fees but collect what school administrators call parents' support funds.
That small fee is the one which is being used for the day-to-day resources that are needed for the learning process. Chalks, preparatory books, learning aids, the termly examination, the three terms, which means three termly examinations. Of course, the examinations will involve you buying stationery and all those things. Then, water. We are pouring water. Like in my school here, we have a 25-barrel tank, which we used to pay 3,750. And then we have to pour twice. Every 2 days or the third day, we have to bring in water because we have a population of 2,000 students. So because of that one, you will see that there is a lot of stress, financial stress.
Kenyi says schools administrations also use part of the funds collected from parents to pay wages of part-time teachers who are not on the government payroll. He says many teachers are quitting because of the low wages, which are often not paid promptly. Ben Tombe is the head teacher at Supiri Secondary School in Juba. He says since working at Supiri, he has not received this allocation. But both Kenyi and Tombe say the capitation grants were a donor-funded project which is due to end. Tombe says this year alone, his school, which has at least 1,000 students, requires at least 3 million South Sudanese pounds or $13,000 to be able to function. Kenyi says government should address the challenges of implementing the free policy in an honest way.
I think that one cannot work because if you try to see, yes, you will call students to come and then enter the class. Where are you going to get the chalks? Where are you going to get these books to give for the teachers? I think it's not going to be possible.
Tombe says the government should supply schools with the necessary school materials and pay part-timers teachers if they are needed to fully implement the policy. The government has allocated only 4.8% of the 2017-2018 annual budget of 46 billion South Sudanese pounds to the education sector. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move back to Kenya, where environmental activists in Kenya have pledged to take further legal action against Kenya and Chinese corporations if contractors move forward with construction of a railway bridge across Nairobi National Park. The activists held a demonstration Thursday outside Parliament. Rahel Ombur reports for VOA from Nairobi.
About 100 activists chanted as they marched through the streets of Nairobi Thursday to demand that phase two of construction of the Standard Gauge Railway be rerouted around Nairobi National Park. The park is a rare wildlife sanctuary located just minutes from the city center of one of Africa's rapidly growing economic and technological hubs.
This is a tiny park. It's an absolute jewel to the Nairobi citizens, the whole of Kenya. It's crowded with guests. You know, everybody who comes on safari, their first stop is Nairobi National Park before they go to the Mara and all those places. And it's a disaster if they take it away.
The 6-kilometer bridge planned to cross over the park is part of a much larger project, the SGR, a massive regional rail network largely funded by China. Kenya opened the Nairobi to Mombasa line last year. This second phase of the SGR in Kenya is set to connect Nairobi to Naivasha. Environmentalists said the construction would affect the ecology of the park, endangering the wildlife and their natural habitats. Paul Mark from Friends of Nairobi National Park read a petition outside Parliament.
The purpose of this letter is to remind you of the court orders in place which stop the Kenya Railway Corporation and any other person from construction of the standard gauge railway, the SGR, within the Nairobi National Park.
In 2017, the National Environmental Tribunal ordered a temporary halt to construction in the Nairobi National Park in response to a petition from environmental groups. The activists demanded the government conduct an environmental impact study. The case is still pending. However, Kenya Railways, a state company, and its partner, the China Road and Bridge Corporation, moved to begin construction work in the park in late February. The Kenya Coalition for Wildlife Conservation and Management said in a statement Thursday that it would seek to have the contractors held in contempt. Officials at the Kenya's Ministry of Transport and Kenya Railways did not respond to VOA's request for comment. Marco Prichma sits on the board of Friends of Nairobi National Park.
Nairobi National Park is an open park, which means animals can migrate freely in and out at the southern boundaries of the park. If there's going to be a lot of noise because of construction in certain areas, you will see certain animals will move out of that particular area, go to another area, pushing out other animals. And they might go out of the park, causing extra human-wildlife conflict outside the park.
Last year, environmentalists unsuccessfully tried to stop construction of Phase 1 of the SGR, which passes through Tsavo National Park. Activists say the rail line interferes with elephant migration. A total of 7 possible routes were considered for Phase 2 of the SGR, 2 of which did not pass through the national park. The government said the current design was picked as the most cost-effective and technically feasible. The Kenya Wildlife Service also rubber-stamped the decision to build a rail bridge over the park, saying it would have minimal interference with the movement of wildlife. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
That report by Ombor from Nairobi brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now take you back to Juba with a song by Isaka Number One. This one is Wonusu Nas.
I respect you, Mr. Flavor. Remixed by Isaka Number One. Matakutubalenas.
I'll be one who swiss him taki. Amolu hajata taki bes. Asma kalam tanas al quest. I'll be sainita befikral quest. Kanu ogisa, kanu fikira. Kano wonusa, kano doria. La anu finasta nin bija. Bija ubida kalu fogo. Umon bikeli mogali. Intaza tumaru fainu. Intaza tumaru ftesu. Kan inta asuma umon. Ajataki bikarabu. Yala umon bi wonusu, wonusu, wonusu. Yala umon bi atako, atako, atako. Mata sibu mon. Dakal, dakal, sambala. Dakal fi ajataki, mata sibu mon. Dakal dakal sambala, dakal fi ajataki. Lakabata soso, fitina kaman soso, wonu sunas soso. Mata dakal fajatanas, guluzo beteri gato akui. De alaya ukala guzete, wa alaya u aruf sababdo. Mafizon bi aruf sababde, kujurma bi aruf sababde. Sahara ma bi aruf sababde, shetan ma bi aruf sababde. Ashan kida sibu ana, mata dakal fi ajatahi. Mata tabu ana bilai, mata douru waratahi. Mata sibu mon. Dakal dakal sambala, dakal fi ajataki, mata sibu mon. Dakal dakal sambala.
We have been listening to Isaka Number One with the song Wonusu Nas. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Would like to hear what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
bihibu futu waranasi bihonu suwa kwana he inta malu ya sabi kelbiki wajaza manto wila shankalam.